This session is called How to Take a Spiritual History. And what we're going to do, how many of you have ever taken a spiritual history from a real live patient? All right, we have some experts in the room already. By the time we're done, I want you to all feel like you know how to do this and it's not a big deal. Okay? So that is the goal of this session today. And I thank Cade, since I didn't bring a remote for my computer. What can I tell you? I'm over 50. And so Cade is going to advance the slides. Cade, if you could show us the next one. And these are my disclosures. Back up one. Of people who've taught me and programs that have taught me about this myself. Next slide. Spirituality is trending. So this is a Google Ngram viewer graph. And what this does is it looks at the number of times that the words religion, spiritual, and spirituality have appeared in English language publications over time. And you'll see from 1980 to almost 2020, over that 40 years, in terms of a percentage of all words in the publications, spirituality, religion is about doubled. So it's a trending topic. Next slide. You might say it's taking off, spirituality. And, you know, that's English language, but next slide. If you look at Chinese language publications, it's even more dramatic over the last 40 years. So spirituality has about doubled, but religion's mentioned about tenfold increase in the Chinese language publications around the world. So this is a trending topic, and people are interested in it. Next slide. And it has a dark side. You know, it's true in the United States, too, that spirituality is on the rise. And if there are Catholic priests who specialize in the issue of demon oppression and exorcism, and they are overwhelmed with consults of people asking, do I have a demon? Am I oppressed by a demon? And could you do something about it? So, you know, it's in the Atlantic Monthly now, this aspect of spirituality. So this is a very timely and important topic. Next slide. So here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what is this thing, spirit? And spirituality anyway. Does it have anything to do with health? What are the best practices around spirituality and health that secular organizations would tell us? We're then going to, I and a couple of friends are going to illustrate to you taking a spiritual history. And then we're going to tell you to practice and role play in groups of three. And at the very end, we're going to touch on what comes after taking a spiritual history, which is really like, we don't have time for all that, but we're going to just touch on it at the end. Okay, next slide. So what is spirit? Well, you know, in 1 Thessalonians, Paul writes, may your whole spirit, soul, and body be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. So he seems to give this Trinitarian view of what a person is, body, soul, and spirit. And increasingly, if you were to delve into this, you'd find that people who think and write about this say soul and spirit are probably not identical, but really both elements of this idea of our immaterial selves. So for our purposes today, we're going to say it's our immaterial self, our body being, of course, our material self. And they're kind of knit together inseparably in each of us. And so it includes your mind, your emotions, your desires, your will. People would, especially in older things, would say that's more the soul aspect of you. And it's also that part of us that relates to other spirits and to God who is spirit. So spirituality is a relational plane. It's how you relate to God, how God speaks to you, and how actually there's a level at which we interact with other human spirits as well. Next slide. And it turns out all people have spirits, and you don't have to be religious to have spiritual experiences. And, you know, many of you probably know people who are not religious, but who would say they are spiritual. And what are those spiritual experiences like? Well, non-religious people would describe their spiritual experiences as a deep connection to the divine, if they believe in God. Or if they don't believe in God, they'd say a deep connection to the universe, to the world around them. There are profound moments of personal transcendence, this idea there's something much bigger than myself that I am connecting to, a spiritual plane, a connection and wonder. And they say these experiences often happen while out hiking or in nature, while, you know, something much bigger than myself I'm in touch with, or having a peak experience, and that could be a literal experience of climbing a mountain, but it could also be a figurative peak experience of an achievement in life, or enjoying great art or music. Interestingly, often they say it's while studying science, having a spiritual experience, and or during yoga and meditation. And when pressed, what's this like, this spiritual experience? They would say, well, I have a feeling of awe, or a feeling of really deep humility, and a sense that I'm very small, and there's something much larger than me. And, you know, I used to frankly, think little of this, belittle this sort of stuff, saying, well, this isn't real. This is just sort of, you know, I'm a Christian. I know what's real. But I've changed my view on this 180 degrees because I think this idea of people having a spiritual experience is a fantastic point of connection for us with people who are irreligious and with our patients who are irreligious but have some sense of spirituality. Next slide, Cade. So it turns out that spirituality and bodily health are linked. And we could do a whole hour on the evidence in the medical literature for this, but we're not. I'm going to give you two minutes on it here. So there's some references, some summary references at the bottom. It turns out religious activity is associated with decreased mortality. And you say, well, religious activity, that's a way of quantifying or trying to measure objectively this inner thing of spirituality. And so we have epidemiologic studies from all around the world following large groups of people for various periods of time and consistently showing a decrease in mortality rate among people who regularly attend religious services versus those who never attend religious services. So mortality, that's a pretty hard outcome in epidemiologic studies. And so there seems to be something about participating in a religious community, not necessarily Christian community, just any religious community that's good for health. Next slide, Cade. And it turns out that this thing called spiritual distress is associated with poor health outcomes. Increased mortality in people who are sick with a chronic disease if they think that God is punishing them, that God has abandoned them, that the devil made this disease happen to them. Those things are signs of this thing called spiritual distress. It's associated with poor health outcomes. Next slide. It also turns out that spirituality and religion helps people cope with serious illness. And there's a large literature out there in the medical literature showing that that is the case. And you might say, coping doesn't matter so much to me. I'm in nursing or medicine to cure people. But you know, if you want people to do well, you often have to help them cope because the treatment you're giving has side effects and they're going to have to heal from the surgery. They're going to have to cope with disability, at least for a period of time. Coping's hugely important in what we do. Next slide. And then finally, we know that religious beliefs impact medical treatment decisions. And can you think of an example? Yes, I mean, that's the classic thing of not wanting blood or blood products because of a religious belief. But it turns out there's many other examples of this, too. And so for all these reasons, spirituality and healthcare practice are related. And the data I've just so briefly summarized for you, I want to be clear. It doesn't prove that God exists. It doesn't prove that our faith is true. But in some ways, that's the power of this data, because it's not linked to a particular set of beliefs. And that gets me to the idea of cultural competence. Next slide. Oh, okay. I'm missing a slide. So, well, I guess I'll get to it. So because this data isn't linked to a particular set of beliefs, there is broad consensus that it's good to know about patients' spirituality. And people advocate that who are Christian, who are Jewish, who are Muslim, who are atheistic. Doesn't matter, because it turns out spirituality and health are linked. So if we want good health for our patient, we should take an interest in their spirituality. And so you have these best practice statements from secular organizations that I'm just going to show you that validate the importance of taking an interest in your patient's spirituality. How many medical students here? Excellent. So the American Association of Medical Colleges learning objectives for medical students include knowing the impact of spirituality on health. I think some of you have probably heard a lot more about this than the 2 minutes I gave. And having the ability to elicit a spiritual history, the thing we're talking about here today. The British General Medical Council is the authoritative body for medical practice in the United Kingdom. And they say in assessing a patient's conditions and taking a history, you should take account of spiritual, religious, social, and cultural factors as well as their clinical history and symptoms. Next slide. We have many nurses here, I know. I think most of you are nurses. Yeah, let's do it. How many nurses? Yes, excellent. Excellent. So the International Council of Nurses Code of Ethics states, the nurse promotes an environment in which the human rights, values, customs, and spiritual beliefs of the individual, family, and community are respected. And NANDA International, now you docs in the room probably don't know what NANDA is, but the nurses do. It's the world's leading nursing diagnosis association. So NANDA defines nursing diagnoses, and you know, in the chart, there are nursing diagnoses, and each one is linked to a treatment plan. And so NANDA recognizes spiritual distress and readiness for enhanced spiritual well-being as nursing diagnoses informing treatment plans. This is a secular organization now. The World Health Organization advises healthcare workers and organizations to provide access to social, emotional, and spiritual support for patients and their families. So all this stuff about spirituality is there because of the evidence from the medical and nursing literature. And as I said, the power of it is, this is not linked to a particular faith. And it's agnostic to faith, these statements. But for us, it gives us a beautiful opportunity to treat our patients holistically, to understand their spirituality, and God can use that in tremendous ways. Next slide. And this is the Joint Commission saying the same thing. Next slide. So here we go. Thank you. So for all these reasons, assessing spirituality is considered a cultural competence of healthcare workers. Now, what is a cultural competence? Well, it's the ability to understand, appreciate, and interact with people from cultures or belief systems different than our own. So no matter what the faith of our faith or of our patients, we should be able to constructively assess and understand the religious and spiritual beliefs of our patients and take these into account when evaluating and treating them. So again, these are statements from secular sources. So it's best practice for you in your clinical setting to take an interest in your patient's spirituality. Next slide, Kate. So back to the spiritual history. So what is this that we're here talking about today? Spiritual history is an assessment tool. It's a way of diagnosing your patient's spiritual state. It's like another vital sign. It's like you're taking the patient's spiritual temperature. That's what the spiritual history is. Why? Well, I've just shown you. Spirituality impacts health. It's considered best practice to take a spiritual history and understand your patient's spirituality. Now, and most of us, at least in medicine, do this as part of what's called the social history part of an intake or a history that we're taking from a patient. And I think in nursing, would you also take it as part of a social history? Help me out, you nurses who have done this. I see some nods, yes, thank you. It consists of asking questions of the patient. And we're going to get to what those questions are. It's not about converting the patient. Sorry, it's not. It's about diagnosis, not treatment. It's about what is my patient's spiritual state? What is their spiritual temperature? And it's not a time for you to share your own beliefs. It's not a time for you to preach to your patient or have a theological argument with them. That's not what it's about. You're collecting information. And some of you might be disappointed by that. You might say, well, what use is that? Collecting information about my patient's spirituality. Turns out it's tremendously useful. And we're going to get into that a little bit as we go. Next slide. Okay, so now I and a couple of friends are going to do some role-play spiritual histories for you before you role-play with each other. Okay, so Jeff, my friend Jeff Thompson, I think I have to take this off. But I think they want to record us. Will it reach? Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'll sit here so we don't trip over the whole thing. Jeff is an emergency room physician from Buffalo. He teaches an emergency medicine residency, and he has a lot of experience doing emergency room in Africa. So if you want to know something about all that, you can mob Jeff after the session. But we're here. I'm going to be the doctor, and he's going to be the patient. And we don't have time for me to go through three complete history and physicals here on an imaginary patient. So we're going to start off and then quickly shortcut to the spiritual history. Okay, you guys with me? Okay. Why don't you tell them and us who you are?
Hello, I am a 30-year-old man. I am coming to the GI clinic because I have really bad reflux that my primary care doctor can't manage, and he sent me to GI.
By the way, I'm a gastroenterologist. I don't know if I said that. Hi there, Jeff. I'm Mark Tapazian.
Hi there.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
How are you doing today?
Doing okay. Got some pain, but overall I'm doing okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. And I was looking through a bit of the records you brought with you.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm just going to shortcut to the social. I'm not going to take his whole reflux history in front of you. So shortcut to the social history. Jeff, what do you do for a living?
I'm a high school science teacher.
Wow, that's a challenging job.
Yeah, that probably explains some of my symptoms.
Well, yeah, could be. Is faith or spirituality a part of your life now or in the past?
No, not really. I mean, I'm a scientist, so not really that much.
Tell me about your family.
I just got married about a year ago. That might also be
congratulations.
Part of it too.
Yeah. Okay, did you notice the spiritual history? It happened really fast. It was one question, and he said, not really. I just took his spiritual temperature. Okay? All right, let's do another one, Jeff. Who are you this time?
Okay, my name is Abdi Nasir. I am a 50-year-old coming in for a colonoscopy.
Very good. Hey there, Abi, is that your name?
Yeah, Abdi Nasir, yes.
Abdi Nasir.
Yes.
Excuse me, my pronunciation's a problem.
That's okay.
I'm Mark Tapazian.
I probably can't pronounce that.
How you doing today?
I'm pretty well, thank you, doctor.
Yeah. I understand you're here about a colonoscopy. How come?
My mother had colon cancer, and so my doctor thought I should have a colonoscopy done.
Okay, so now we're going to shortcut to the social history. So, Abi Nasir, what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm currently unemployed.
And have you had some employment in the past?
Oh, yeah. In the past, I've done a number of different kind of jobs.
Like what?
Yes. So I was in construction for a while, and I worked at a restaurant, and just a number of different things.
Hard work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is faith or spirituality a part of your life, or was it in the past?
I'm not sure what that has to do with anything related to my colonoscopy, doctor.
Well, that's fair. You know, it's having a colonoscopy is not a spiritual experience, but it turns out that spirituality and health are related, and my professional organizations all say I should be asking you questions like that, but you don't have to answer. It's perfectly fine.
No, that's fine. I mean, I'm Muslim, and I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but yeah, that's kind of my background.
Thank you for sharing. How important is your faith to you?
I mean, it's an important. I pray every day, and it's something that, of course, it's part of my culture and my experience.
Excellent. And do you have a community that supports or encourages you?
Yeah, I have a mosque that I am part of. Yes.
Do we any aspect of your belief that we need to take into account as we take care of you? And do these medical things?
I don't think so, not that I've been told.
Okay. Tell me about your family.
I have four children. They're all grown at this point, and so it's just me and my wife at the house.
Fantastic. Okay, did you notice the spiritual history that time? Went along a little longer, right? Because he said yes to the first question. And we're going to get to a little bit about that. Okay, let's do another one.
Sure. I am a 45-year-old man who has had some jaundice for the past month and had a mass fund on the pancreas, and I'm coming in for a consultation for a stent.
Hey there, I'm Mark Tapazian. What's
there.
Your name?
My name is Jeff.
Jeff, nice to meet you today. How you doing?
To be honest, doctor, I'm a little bit nervous. A little bit nervous about this.
Why is that?
Well, my doctor told me that he thinks I probably have a cancer or maybe have a cancer and and probably need a stent, and this is just all kind of overwhelming.
Wow. That's a hard word to hear, cancer.
It was very hard.
Are you sleeping?
Not well. No.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah. Difficult. Okay, we're going to shortcut to the social history. Tell me what you do for a living, Jeff.
I'm a teacher.
Excellent. What do you teach?
I teach music.
Wow. Impressive. I wish I had your skills.
Thank you.
Is faith or spirituality part of your life, or was it in the past?
If you had asked me that about a month ago, I would have said it's the most important part of my life.
Wow.
But these last few weeks, I'm not so sure what I think anymore.
Wow. Well, that's quite a striking reversal. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I feel like I've been following the Lord for my whole life, to have this happen to me, in the past month, and have somebody tell me that I, might not live or see my three kids grow up. Yeah. It's been really hard for me to take, and it's really shaken my faith.
Wow, difficult place to be. Thank you for sharing that with me. Tell me about your family. You mentioned three kids.
I have three kids. They're 12, 10, and 7.
Okay, so that's another spiritual history. Did you hear it that time? A little different again. Okay, so we're going to have a couple of more examples now where my friend Luke is going to come, Luke Rettig, and he's going to be the doctor. Luke is a surgeon. So he tells me he's boiled the spiritual history down for surgeons. I'm going to be the patient, and he's going to be the doctor, and we're going to give you a couple more examples. I don't know how we're going to do the microphone here.
You
want
me to hold it?
Yeah, I think it's probably more important for you than... Or you can clip
put it right
there.
Here? Perfect. All right. Hi, Dr. Topazian. I'm Dr. Rettig.
Hey, Dr. Rettig.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming into the office today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was reading over your chart, and I'm sorry to hear about your diagnosis.
What's my diagnosis?
Your diagnosis is cancer.
Okay. Yeah, it's just been shocking. There was just a screening exam, and they found this mass in my colon. I still can't really believe it's true.
Yeah. Well, how has that affected you right now?
I think about it a lot. Some knowledge is sometimes not so helpful, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Now, do you have any type of faith or spirituality that would help you in a difficult time like this?
I haven't really thought about those two things in connection. I don't really. I mean, when I was a kid, I went to church, but with my family, but it's been years.
I see. Is that something that's important to you at this point in your life?
It really hasn't been.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, tell me more about your family.
I'm married. I have three marvelous daughters.
Excellent.
Okay. So to me now, as the patient, that actually felt quite fine. And, one of the things I appreciated as the patient was that he wasn't all uptight about asking me about spirituality. It just kind of came. And that he was just asking me about me. He wasn't, making some pitch to me in any sort of a way. Okay. You want to do another one?
Sure. Let's do another one.
Okay. Who am I this time?
Who do you want to be?
Okay. How about... I've been having these episodes of severe, steady abdominal pain up here that wake me up in the middle of the night once in a while, and they told me I should see you about that.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming into the office again, Dr. Topazian. It's nice to see you.
Nice to meet you, Dr.
Yeah, Reddy. Nice to meet you as well. So, again, tell me about what you do for a living.
I'm a teacher. I teach science. Mm-hmm.
I know some anatomy.
Good.
Yeah.
So you might be aware of what's going on a little bit.
I don't know. They say it might be my gallbladder.
Okay. I see. Tell me, does your career kind of, is it challenging or do you enjoy it? How does that affect you?
It is challenging. You know, it's hard to keep up with cell phones in the class these days.
Everyone's all distracted.
Struggle. Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
You have cell phones in the operating room?
Just to listen to music, but nobody's texting.
I'm glad to hear it.
Good. So tell me, do you have any type of faith or spirituality that'll help you at a time like this when you're dealing with this diagnosis?
I'm into science, and I think that all that faith stuff is, you know, it's a scam.
Yeah. The only reason I ask is because there's a lot of data that kind of shows that people with spirituality or faith do have improved outcomes in a lot of different areas medicine. So that's the only reason I ask. If it's not important.
Do you think my surgery is going to go better if I believed in God?
No. I just wanted to know if that's something that was important to you, I could address that and help you identify the people that you would need in your life if that's important.
Okay. Yeah. Not me.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about your diagnosis then.
Okay. All right. So please say thank you to Luke and to Jeff for helping out here. Okay, next slide, Kate. So when you do your role play, now you've seen a number of examples, but this is a framework I want you to use as you role play to ask questions as a spiritual history taker. And in the medical literature, there's a number of different algorithms or approaches to taking a spiritual history, but the one we're going to use today is called FICA. And that's what you're going to use when you're taking a spiritual history and role play now in the next 15 minutes. So FICA stands for, the F is faith and belief, the I is importance, the C is community of faith, and the A is address and care. And in these examples we just showed you, all these questions in every category got asked in at least one of those scenarios. And so faith and belief, now you see a number of questions there, but as you'll notice from the thing, each of us, we only asked one question of the patient. 20 years ago, when I started doing this, I would just say, what is your religion for faith and belief? That doesn't work so well anymore, at least not in America, because my interest is to avoid getting a no. If you ask the faith and belief question and it's, no, I don't have any faith, I don't have any religion or belief, you're done taking the spiritual history. The rest of these questions have no relevance. You know, if a patient's there, and you're taking a review of systems, and you ask, do you have a cough? And they say, no. You don't say then, oh, and tell me about your sputum, and how often do you cough? No, you're done with the cough part of it, right? So spiritual history, it's the same. If the answer to the faith and belief part is no, you move on to the next part of your history taking. So I try and ask a question that's fairly broad, and that's going to welcome a positive response even from someone who has no religious affiliation, someone with so-called nuns, right, which at least in the U.S. are very common. On the other hand, you know, I live in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and I live in a culture where everyone knows there's a spiritual reality. And oftentimes the patient sitting in the chair, it's obvious what their faith is by their dress. So their faith and belief for me turns into more of a statement. I see you're Orthodox. Is that correct? I'm not going to say to a woman in a burqa who's in the office, do you have a religious faith? You know, so a lot of this gets customized to the setting you're in. So the questions I'm showing you are more sort of American questions that I would ask in Minnesota when I'm there in the summer seeing patients. So is faith a part of your life? Were you raised in a faith or religious tradition? Are you practicing now? Do you consider yourself a spiritual person? You'll pick one of those questions and try it out. Okay, so when you're doing your role play. Question two, importance. If you get a yes or some kind of positive response to the F, well, how important is it? What in your life? Does it help you in difficult times like this? Luke asked me that question at one point. Are there spiritual issues you're struggling with? Community, and it's interesting that illness causes some people to struggle with their spirituality. You heard that too in an example that Jeff gave us. Community of faith. Are you part of a spiritual or religious community? Does it support and encourage you or not? And how? And then address and care. How would you like us to use this information as we care for you? And some people, I have dietary limitations, and I'm going to be here in the hospital. Are you going to be able to give me the diet I need to have? That would be common where I live in Addis Ababa. Blood products, therapies derived from aborted fetal tissue. It goes on and on. There's many actual ways that how you care for your patient may be impacted. And if Luke is operating on a patient in the operating room and no one ever asked them if blood transfusions were okay, that's a problem. Could be a big problem, right? So that's why this is best practice to do this stuff. Okay, next slide, Kate. So we're going to get into groups of three. Now, I'm sorry, I know many of you are in an odd number that's, you know, five or four or seven, but I want you to get into groups of three, and so let's do that, and then I'll tell you what to do as a group. Move your chairs, get into little circles. Guys, you got to spread apart enough that you're not hearing what they're doing. Maybe the three guys could just move a little bit. Thank you. Okay, are we in? All right, you should be in groups of three by now. So here's what I want you to do. So in your group of three, one of you, you're going to take turns, but to start off, one of you needs to be the patient. Who's going to be the patient in the group of three? Decide. Okay, one of you is going to be the caregiver, the nurse or doctor or therapist or dentist who's doing an intake on the patient. Who's going to be the caregiver? Decide. Okay. And the third one of you is an observer watching what's happening. Okay, so that's whoever's left. So the caregiver, you saw how we did it. You can get a chief complaint or initial thing, but then just move to the social history and embed your spiritual history in the social history and try it out. Because many of you have never actually asked these questions before, and it's going to feel a little awkward, but this is why we're here. So you're going to try it out. Now, for the patient, this is your chance to be like a Hollywood actor. Okay, so you don't have to be yourself. You can be religious or irreligious. You can be very wary of questioning about this. What are you asking me? Or you can be very open, or you can be non-interested. It's completely up to you. It's going to be a surprise to the caregiver. Okay? That's the idea. Now, if you're the observer, you've got an important job because you need to know how comfortable is the caregiver asking these questions and how comfortable is the patient answering them. And does the caregiver use that FICA algorithm, which I'm going to put on the screen here so you can see it? Do they ask about faith? And if they get a yes, are they asking about importance and community and address and care? And then, observer, you notice, is the caregiver preaching or arguing about religion? Because that's not what's supposed to happen, but I can guarantee you it will happen in some of the groups here. Okay, people can't help themselves. So you are collecting information. You are not trying to convert your patient at this stage, okay? So that's your job. Are they prescribing, preaching, arguing? As an observer, you got to take a look at that. Okay, next slide, Cade. Sorry. All right, so this is up here to help you. These are the FICA questions. Don't worry. Look up here and check out. Get some ideas about questions to answer. And then when you are the patient, you could have any faith background, Catholic, Jehovah's Witness, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, animist, atheistic, no religious affiliation, whatever you want. In importance, you could be nominal. You could say, you know, you could be a cultural Muslim with no real commitment. You could be devout. It's up to you. And then community of faith, maybe you have no community or you're peripherally involved or you're hugely involved or you're feeling alienated from your community. Huh?
And address and care, if it's something around diet or blood products or whatever, or end-of-life decisions, you know, you feel free to make it up. Okay? So are you got any questions about this now? So we're going to give you 10 minutes, and that should be more than enough to rotate around so each of you in the group of three get to play each role. Okay? Go. Stop. Is there any table that you didn't get all the way around? Couple of outliers. Okay. That's sorry about that. But we're going to have another chance. So, okay, now you've done Spiritual History 101. Okay, how did it go? Any feedback? What was it like to ask those questions? Tell me. What? Awkward. Yeah, it sure feels awkward the first time. That's why we're practicing here. Yeah. that's a good perspective, but really your goal as a healthcare professional is to ask them all in a very prosaic, matter of fact, no big deal kind of way, right? Right? But it takes some practice with certainly both the categories you mentioned. Okay. Yes, that's so true, isn't it? And no matter what, you're going to get no's, because there's a lot of people out there, the answer is just no. But you want to give an opportunity to hear more, right? Yeah, okay, excellent. Other observations. What was it like to take a spiritual history?
It was definitely tempting to, like...
Tempting to what?
I guess, like, ask them to prepare, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of reach out.
Tempting to reach out. And so, yes, and so what I will say is you're allowed to make an empathetic comment. And, you know, I didn't tell you that before. But in fact, I Luke did that with me. I did that with Jeff on one occasion. Absolutely, you're a human being with another human being. But that's very different than preaching or arguing or asserting or sharing your own theology or something, right? But to say, that must be really difficult. Yeah. And sometimes you hear something and it gets added to your problem list. But you're taking a history right now. You're just doing a diagnosis. You move on. And maybe at the end of the interaction, you're going to circle back, maybe. That we'll touch on that at the end. Okay. Any other comments? Yeah.
Crystal does a great job of asking, I'm going to ask you some questions about spirituality. Is that okay? And it was just a great icebreaker before hitting in with, like, tell me about your faith or spirituality. It was just a soft...
It felt good as the patient to hear that. So I like that. She said, I'm going to ask you some questions about faith or spirituality. Is that okay? And I think that's really nice. And, you know, I go back and forth on asking permission for this. I don't ask permission if I can ask you about if you have a cough. I don't ask permission to, may I ask you about your employment? I just ask. And even things like sexual history, I just ask. So, yes.
If I could add to that, one, the first that I generally take is I affirm that depending on the setting I'm in, of course, but part of us caring for the whole person is that we ask questions about your medical, but we also ask questions about your spirituality, your faith. So now I'd like to ask a few questions about that. Do you have any faith practice or belief systems that are important to you? And for a transition now.
Can everyone hear her? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
That's how I tend to transition, because some people in certain contexts get very defensive about if you're going to bring up spirituality, especially if they're sensing you have an agenda or you're like a Christian missionary or a person or whatever, or even in our current, I'll say in the U.S. versus when I'm overseas, those settings that it'll kind of be like, well, why are you asking that? So I just preemptively say in medical, you know, care, we consider the whole person being part. And so now I'd like to ask you some questions about that. So it kind of brings it, okay.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. And I think the nice thing about asking permission is you get permission.
Yeah.
I mean, and if someone questions it, you give a reason.
Yeah.
So if you have the time to add that in a very busy practice, you might not have the time to add that extra 30 seconds. Because this whole process should generally take less than 30 seconds. But yeah, I think that's beautiful. And, maybe something I would add is if you're a student and you're working in a big healthcare organization, you probably want to talk to your supervisor or your preceptor or your attending or whatever it is and explain that I take a spiritual history as part of the whole history, and I just want you to know I'm doing that. Is that okay? Because some of them will say, no, what's that? And you'll have a chance to educate them that it's best practice. But if you're in a big institution that might be wary about people trying to convert other people in the hospital, you know, it might even be good to ask your preceptor as a student about that. So thank you for that comment, because it's very valid. It's a very valid way to do this. Other comments? Yes, go for it.
As I'm thinking through the context of what we do in short-term missions, we're super conscientious. What we ask at the front end is that they don't think they have to comply to whatever our religious requests are to get care, because we never want their yes or their compliance to think that they have to comply to go through clinic. So as I'm thinking through this as part of the, you know, really a medical or a whole person exam, what does that look like, and how much caution we have to take so they don't perceive that they have to comply to get to go on with the rest of the clinic? So we typically do spiritual counseling at the end, yet it is so critically important to understand the whole person at the beginning. So how important is those questions and the wording?
So I would say that what I've been aiming at today is not you on a short-term mission trip. It's been you where you're studying or working every day in your current life. That's important. And if you are on a short-term mission trip somewhere, I would ask my host about this whole area before I did anything. So that's a really important point. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So we've done... Sorry, yes.
So in like American practice, have you noticed while you're doing this history, semantically... I think you recently mentioned like religious. You don't use the word phrase religious.
But I don't. Faith. Not in Minnesota.
So faith or spirituality is like more acceptable?
I get more yeses or more interesting answers if I ask about faith and spirituality than if I ask about what religion are you. Now, but as I said, in a different context, that's not true. So you have to fit some of this to your context and what feels natural and easy for you, what question. And it takes practice. You know, I would say do this with 100 patients. And at the end, you'll know what works for you. Huh? And sorry, we can't do 100 of them today, but we're at least getting you started. Were there other comments, observations?
I was thinking just about your comment about addressing it with your preceptor, and I think that's a great way to kind of avoid hot water. I think also you want the yes. So you may also contextualize within, how long do you want me spending in a room before you come in as my preceptor? And then, I usually ask these review assistants questions. Are you okay with that? And then tagging on to the end of that sort of whole conversation, I also take spiritual history. Because if you just kind of downshift into, I'm just going to take spiritual history, then they tell you, what does that mean? And know a little bit more often than if you kind of were contextualizing that conversation about expectations.
Yes, that's an excellent comment. Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you. All right, well, we just got a few minutes left. So I wanted to add, like, you guys have already, like, now mastered the basics of spiritual history. So I wish I had certificates to pass out to all of you, but I don't. But I want to give you now a little more flavor about two subjects. So one is this idea of religious struggle or spiritual distress. So you can actually diagnose this if you so cared as you're getting into a spiritual history and someone says, yes, I'm Christian. My faith is very important to me. But like that last case that Jeff did with me, he said, until last month, I would have told you this is really important to me. Now I'm not so sure. Whoa. Tell me more about that. Well, I wouldn't say whoa to him. But I'm thinking to myself... Whoa, that's interesting. So tell me more about that, Jeff. Huh? And sometimes it even boils down to questions like this that have been asked in research settings that have studied the impact of spirituality on mortality. So this is actually from studies done in North Carolina where they asked patients with serious chronic illnesses, do you feel God has abandoned you? Again, this is not the first question, but this is a follow-up question with some patients. Do you think God's punishing you? Do you think the devil made this happen to you? So in the studies done in Carolina, if someone answered yes to any one of these questions, then their two-year mortality rates were significantly higher than people who answered no. Yeah. I mean, that again, that it matters in health, this stuff. So these questions are reasonable in the right setting. If someone says to the first question of faith, says no, okay, I'm done with the spiritual history. But if they say the sort of thing Jeff said to me, and I sometimes will ask a question, if they say, yes, faith is important to me, then when I get to see the community of faith, I'll say, do you have a community of faith that's either encouraging or discouraging you in this? I find in Addis Ababa, there's a lot of patients who feel alienated from their faith and their community as a result of their illness. Huh? So a young Muslim woman who has a vesico-vaginal fistula and has been kicked out of the home and her family wants and her community want nothing to do with her because of odor. Whoa, so she's feeling alienated from her faith community. None of that comes out unless you take a bit of a spiritual history. Or a patient like Jeff, role-played, who says, you know, cancer? I thought I had a deal with God, you know, and now this? Huh? And your job when you're taking the spiritual history is not to speak into that. It's to learn about that. And that itself is very important. So next slide, Cade. Next slide. We don't have time to do role plays again. And then another place where the spiritual history will help you tremendously, especially in the U.S., is with nuns. Now, I'm not talking about the people, you know, who are in convents. I'm talking about those with no religious affiliation, a very large group in America now and in Europe now. And it turns out you can categorize people who are nuns into three categories. And this is a fascinating research project that was published recently about this, where they can be considered campaigning nuns, tolerant nuns, or spiritual nuns. And by taking a spiritual history, you find out which one they are. And that turns out to sometimes be very useful down the road in your relationship with them. And so a campaigning nun is someone who believes the physical universe is all there is. And science explains reality, and religion is a scam. It's people, you know, just use it to rip people off and take their money. It's all false and negative, and the Crusades and all the harm religion has done. So that's a campaigning nun. And how would you expect they would react when you start to take a spiritual history? Negatively, right? And your job is not to argue back. It's to say, thank you for telling me. Tell me about your family, or do you smoke, or whatever your next question is, huh? So you're just moving through it. So, but now you know. That's how this person feels about faith. And it may never come up again in your relationship with them, or it may dramatically come up in your relationship with them as you go on through their medical care journey together. Tolerant nun, like the campaigning nun, believes the physical universe is all there is. But they will say that science can't tell us how to live our lives. There's a gap there. And that religion can be useful. It's not ultimately based on reality, but it can be useful anyway. That's a tolerant nun. And then a spiritual nun, and these people are increasingly common in the United States, they, unlike the other two categories, they think there is a spiritual reality. The universe is not all that there is. There is this spiritual plane. But they're wary of organized religion, maybe have been hurt by organized religion, and want nothing to do with organized religion, but they embrace a wide variety of beliefs and practices. They may believe in angels. They may go to seances. They may pray occasionally. They're not even sure to who. They may use crystals and some sort of spiritual, to have a spiritual experience. And there's many things that these people do. And how will you find that out in a spiritual history? Well, if you ask what religion are you, you won't find out in the U.S. But if you ask, do you think of yourself as a spiritual person, you'll hear a lot of stuff from those people about their practices and beliefs and experiences. So, and all of this, as I said, can become useful. Next slide. Next slide, sorry, this is, yeah, next slide. Okay, so in the 2 minutes that are left,
So you've done the spiritual history. You've made a diagnosis. You've taken your patient's spiritual temperature. What comes next? So if we had another hour, we could start to go into some of that. But you understand your patient's spirituality, or at least something about it, and maybe you've added something to a problem list. This person is experiencing spiritual distress. That's a diagnosis, according to NANDA International. So all of you nurses here, that's a perfectly valid diagnosis to write down. You may have the opportunity to help them connect the dots between their spiritual health and their physical health. And that will vary on where you are, what context you're working in. If you're in a secular teaching hospital in the United States, you know, you're not going to say, can I tell you about the four spiritual laws? Because that's against the ethos of that patient in the institution you're working in. If you are working in a Christian mission hospital in southern Ethiopia, you're going to say to them, you should repent. I have some Ethiopian friends here. They could validate that's true. Yeah, that's what will get said. And that's okay. It works there. So how do you connect the dots between physical and spiritual health? Long conversation. But in the American setting, it often comes down to these things. Helping people connect or reconnect to spiritual resources. I mean, when Luke asked me about spirituality, he kind of caught me by surprise. I've got this colon tumor. And he says, you know, when I was a kid, there was church, but not in a long time. And then he said something more about, to some people, that's important at times like this. And I'm like, oh, interesting, as a patient. He hasn't tried to persuade me about anything, huh? But already, just with that statement, to some of my patients, it becomes important again at a time like this. Now tell me about your family. But that statement he made, he's starting to connect the dots inside of me between my illness and the meaning and significance of my illness and spirituality. So sometimes it's just a little comment that is the way God is using you in the patient's life. Addressing harmful perceptions. People who are experiencing spiritual distress have an incorrect perception that God is punishing them or no longer loves them or has abandoned them because of their illness. And it's usually not our place to give them a theology lecture. At least that's my view. But it is my place to say, circle back at the end. We're going through the problem list in our plan and say, you know, I noticed, you know, you're struggling with this feeling of abandonment from God or from your spiritual community. And that's tough. And you're in a place now where that's the last thing we need in your treatment. I'd love to help you work that out. Can I help you connect to a spiritual resource? And, you know, that might be someone from their own faith tradition to begin with. If there is someone that can counsel them, I could offer to have a counselor or pastor or chaplain come to see them. Pray for your patients is a great way to work because you can pray for all your patients. You don't have to ask them permission to pray for them silently in your mind. And it's amazing how God uses that willingness of ours to pray. And then there's times when you can pray with your patients. And in the United States, my favorite question I learned from colleague Susan Koch in Rochester, Minnesota about this. This is how she asked. She says, would it help if I prayed with you? And I love that question because I always think that's one where we should ask permission. We shouldn't force prayer on our patient. And I think the prayer should be about them, not about my need to pray with them. And so I love Susan's formulation. Would it help you if I prayed with you? And some people say no to me about that. A surprising number say, yeah, that would be great. So I'm a minute over. But I want to thank you all for coming today. And go out and do it. Take 100 spiritual histories, and then you'll really be an expert. God bless.